Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Words of the Wise podcast hosted by me, Lexi Maynard. If this is your first time joining us, or if you haven't done so already, be sure to subscribe for instant updates on new episodes. You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Words of the Wise podcast, or on Twitter at Words of W podcast as well. Joining us today for episode number 11 is a man who is all about his family, Mr. Bill Murphy. It was so nice then that Bill's granddaughter, Jenna, one of my best friends at DPU, was able to sit down with us for the interview. Without further ado, here is Mr. Bill Murphy.
Okay, hello, my name is Bill Murphy. I'm from Indianapolis, lived here all my life, and I think my age is 81. I'd like to think it's younger, but that's why that counts to 81.
So what was Indianapolis like when you were growing up?
That's a good question. I was actually thinking about this, and I go back to, obviously, I was born in 1939. Mm-hmm. The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, December 7th, 1941. So obviously that was the beginning of World War II. And one, I was too young to remember that. But what I do remember is probably this would have been 44, maybe 45. America was afraid that the Japanese would bomb cities in the USA. So there were airway drills where they would come around, they'd turn off all, make you turn off all the lights. Big crybaby anyway, and it, you know, turn off the lights. I don't know, but it was a scary time.
Yeah.
I mean, even, yeah, I wasn't old enough to realize much, but
still.
Yeah. And I do remember when the war ended. Yeah, mm-hmm. I remember the newspaper boy coming down the street, just hollering, the war is over, the war is over. Mm-hmm. I suppose it was on a radio, but I didn't know it, you know.
Yeah. How old would you have been at that time?
Well, I didn't have 45, so I'd been 6.
Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. What did the typical day in your childhood look like?
Well, I went to Holy Trinity, it's on the west side, and it was a mile from our house, and there wasn't any school buses. I had 3 older siblings, so my oldest brother would have been in the 7th grade when I was in the 1st, and then my 2 sisters were younger, obviously. I don't remember exactly what. But anyway, we would walk to school, mm-hmm. and I wasn't very smart, which is no shocker. And the worst part about it, my older brother and sisters were, you know.
Yeah.
And you know how the nuns were. Uh-huh. Well, Billy, I don't know. Your brother is really smart. You know, I must have been an adopted sister. I really don't know. That's the way it happens, you know. So anyway, the only thing I was interested in was sports.
Yeah.
So I'd come home and we'd play, you know, in the neighborhood and everything. And I do remember we didn't have any basketball goals or parks to play in. So we would play softball. We didn't have baseball, softball in the street.
Okay.
And there was a neighbor 2 doors down that would call the police, you know. And poor policemen, they don't want to do anything. So he did this about 3 or 4 times. And somewhere, we lived at 16th and Sharon. We were about a block north of 16th Street. Mm-hmm. And he got to the point when he would get at 16th and Sharon, he'd turn on a siren so we could run. You know,
yeah.
He didn't want to do anything to us.
No,
anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, so. Anyway, we just played sports and went
sports
to school. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah. What did you learn from growing up in a big family?
Well, that's a good question. I was a slow learner, but what I learned, when you're the baby of the family, there's 2 things that happen. You're spoiled, and I enjoyed every minute of that. But the bad part was, and we were only 4, you know, there wasn't a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, popcorn was a real treat, you know. Mm-hmm. And soft drinks were almost unheard of, but boy, you go, when it was on Friday night, whew, like dying going to heaven, it's close to our head,
yeah.
You know. But it was like your family, Jenna's family. It was a close family, so, you know, there's no bad memories at all,
mm-hmm.
you know. It's just... But there's a difference when you're, a close-knit, and 2, in our case, Catholic. But everybody in our neighborhood was not Catholic. I was the only Catholic.
Oh, okay.
And I was thinking about this a week or two. Jen, I don't know why I think, you know, when you get old, you think about whatever. But, you know, divorce is so common now. And there was nobody that I know of in our neighborhood, which is all non-Catholic. And I know there was no one in our school whose parents were divorced. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
This would be in 1946 to, or 44. I'm sorry, and I graduated from grade school in 52. But, you know, it's
so
just
different.
A different world.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure they weren't all happy. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. back in those days, I mean, I think, you know, it was really a black mark
kind of hid their problems.
Yeah. So that's not all good either. But it's just different.
Yeah, very different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you say that you have like a favorite childhood memory or just kind of the whole?
Well, the whole childhood was fun. Favorite memory, you know, probably just playing sports. Mm-hmm. I mean, generally, you know.
Yeah.
That didn't make me good because I played a lot, by the way. It just meant I liked it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So you went to high school at Cathedral.
Correct. Downtown.
Yes. So you were cut from your high school basketball team, right?
I was. I was cut as a junior. Well, I was really good. I was cut twice.
Oh, wow.
I went out as a freshman and got cut, and then I got cut as a junior. And finally, I decided, son, you're not very good. There's no sense in going out anymore. And the worst part about it was, and of course, we all think this when we get cut. I mean, there was a guy that most of us thought couldn't walk and chew gum, and he was on the team. I thought, man, I am really bad, you know. So yeah, that.
So what did getting cut teach you?
You know, both times, at least taught me a lot of humility, number one, and then you realize that sports is really important to you, because mm-hmm. it's not a good feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, particularly the next day when you go to school, you mm-hmm. know. Yeah.
Yeah. So did you have a job when you were growing up in high school?
And I started working at South Grove Golf Course, inside, believe it or not, where the people registered to play and so forth. When I was graduated from grade school, my mom didn't like me. She sent me to first grade when I was five. So I was 12 years old, working behind a counter at South Grove. You know, couldn't hardly count and do anything. But, you know, so they'd come up and register to play.
Yeah.
And I was pretty pathetic at that, too. But my uncle was a pro, so he was afraid to fire me because my mom was his sister.
Yeah.
It hadn't gone over well. But anyway, I actually really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
And I got I worked every other day. I was paid $5 a day, big spender. And I got to play free golf.
And you play a lot of golf now, too.
Yeah. And I back then, I really would play every day. I mean, after work, I no longer had to stay in there.
Yeah.
I would go play a few holes. And then we would go over on off days. There was a couple other guys, and we'd ride our bikes, which was a couple of miles. And basically play all day, you know, 36 holes, and maybe more some days, and then ride our bike back. And one thing that was really good in our growing up is that your parents didn't have the worry about where you were or what might happen in mm-hmm. the worst there is today. You know, I mean, that today just couldn't happen. You know, it just mm-hmm. wouldn't. And tell you a quick story that I grew up about a mile and a half east of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And back then, 16th Street was like a two-lane street, and they would park the night before from the racetrack all the way down to Lafayette Road. And when it was about 12, we asked our parents if we could walk down to the track the night before. Mm-hmm. You know, now, I saw some things I shouldn't see, but we never saw a knife, we never saw a gun, you know, we saw a couple fights, that type of thing. But again, today, you just couldn't do that.
It's really different.
Yeah. So it was a good time.
Mm-hmm. What did like the typical Saturday night look like for you in high school?
I like to say I just beaten off all those women, but the fact remains there weren't any. So we would go out and go to drive-ins, usually not drive-in movies, but you know, there was a pole drive-in at 16th and Lafayette Road,
okay,
and Chet's at 30th and Riverside Drive. And I hate to admit this, but we would just, you know, get a drink at one place and sit there for a couple hours and drive to the other one, and if we had enough money, get another drink, you know.
Yeah.
And that was it, you know, and we'd come home, but boy, that was fun. You know, I thought, in the world, it was, God, we call that fun. But that was really pretty much it. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So we've been talking about your childhood, high school, that sort of thing. What would you say is the greatest thing that your parents taught you?
I think it would be never lie, and if you lie, never get caught. Because if it got caught by my parents, like any of our parents, that is not good. And I would tell you some quick story of my mother, God rest her soul. We had to, we had turns. We paired up, the four of us, to do the dishes. Mm-hmm. You know, one summer night, you know, I always wanted to go out, and, as we all did, play sports. So I ate quick and I jumped up. My mom says, "Where are you going?" I said, "I'm going out to play basketball," whatever it was. She says, "It's your turn, your sister's turn to do dishes." And these were my words, Jenna. I'm not proud of them. You can cut this out. And I said, I don't want to do the damn dishes. I think I was in grade school. I don't know what it was. Next thing I know, I'm in the bathroom, and there was a bar of soap that had water around it and just grimy, greasy, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
You know,
so yeah.
She just rubbed that in my mouth and rubbed that in my mouth. And I'm gagging and choking and thinking, oh, geez, I wish I could die, you know? And finally I said, Mom, could I have a drink of water? No. That's the last time I cussed, by the way, just for the record. But it was really, I think, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. So you went to Marion College.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you go there? What went into that decision?
It was cheap. Mm-hmm. I could live at home. And because I had got cut twice at Cathedral, I wanted to try to play basketball. And it was convenient, you know, mm-hmm. really. It wasn't a great thought process, and it's not like, at least back in those days, one of the reasons to visit a lot of schools, you know. So that just kind of, I'd say it was an accepted thing to do, but just kind of a normal thing to do.
Mm-hmm. So you got cut twice, obviously, in high school.
Yeah.
But you ended up starting for Marion for the basketball team. So how did that happen?
I think they would call it a fluke in these days. I know exactly when it happened. I don't know how many guys went out, so maybe there's only 10. It's probably why I was on the team. But we went down to Vincennes to play, and two guys missed the bus or didn't show up in time, so we left. So we're down to 8. So we go down, and I'm a freshman, so we go down to Vincennes and play, and one guy gets hurt, so we're down to 7. Two guys get in foul trouble, so we're down, you know.
Yeah.
And I know the coach is looking, and I'm the only one there, you know. So I'm sure he's thinking, oh, my God, is there a back door to this gym so we can just leave? So I mean, he had no choice, put me in, you know, and that's kind of how it started.
Mm-hmm. What was that like playing basketball there during the time where race was obviously a big issue?
Well, and I probably told Jenna this story. We had a gentleman on our team that had played at Christmas Attucks with Oscar Robertson that same year. Fact is, long story short, he since passed away and Oscar gave the eulogy, so they were very close. But we went over to Terre Haute to play was Rose Polly then, now Rose Holman. It was about a 4:30 game, and we were coming back, and it wasn't the interstate, so we come back at 40. And we stop at Brazil, just a dumpster-type restaurant, you know. And there's probably 20 people, you know, camp cheerleaders and whoever. So we go in there, it's Saturday evening, there's hardly anybody there. And we sit down, and nothing happens, you know. And I don't know how long this was, but the coach went up to the guy at the counter, you know, just was standing there doing nothing, and he said, you know, we'd really like to get served and get back to Indianapolis. And I never forget this. Nobody. The guy said, take that black man out to the bus, and then you can eat here. This would be 1958, 57.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got in the bus and came back, and we were really mad at him because we didn't get to eat, you know.
Yeah.
No, but it was it's the first time that at least I was on the other side of racism. You know, and he was really a good guy. He was fact is, he became a dentist and could have bought Brazil, you know, later on in life. But that's the way it was. I shouldn't say that's the way it was everywhere, but that's the way it could be.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have any other major stories from your time playing basketball there?
Well, a couple. One, we played Xavier, which was the fact that I found out later that the Xavier coach, we had played like 2 or 3 games. And Xavier had not opened their season yet. All the arrangements were made in the spring. I mean, it's the situation that we had played a couple games. And I was a senior. And somehow I had gotten a few points and averaged a few points, so we got over to Xavier. And, of course, we were totally outclassed. Got beat 90 to 40-something to score. And there was a guy on Xavier named Ducky Castillo. Not that I remember, but that was his name. He was the conference defensive player of the year.
Oh.
So who does Ducky decide to join and just guard? The old guy, or the young guy then, could only go left, you know. Second half, you know, I said, Ducky, I'd like to get a shot off. I mean, you know, could you just back off a little? He didn't. So. But anyway, it was a big deal playing Xavier at that time. Oh, and one other time, we were playing with Indiana Central, which is now University of Indianapolis, of course. And we're playing. We didn't have a seating at the Marion didn't have seating in the gym, so we played our home games at Cathedral and Cecina. So we're playing Cecina. I'm playing at Cecina, playing Indiana Central, who was always better than us. And this was probably a sophomore. And we were down a point, and the Cessna's coach got a technical call in. And then back then, the technical was only one shot. I don't know if it's two now or what. Right. But so the coach, God loving, told me to go shoot it. And the last I saw that ball, it was thrown out the front door of Cessna's gym, and we got beat by 1 point. Because, oh, yeah, I don't think I did real good that year.
They don't free throws now, though.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand why young basketball players can't shoot free throws.
Yeah.
It drives me crazy.
No.
You know, they're more athletic. They can shoot from deeper. They're very, very good in so many ways. But I don't think anyway. I don't think from 15 to 20 feet they shoot as well.
So what was your major at Marion?
Philosophy.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And I was number one in my class. That's the good news. I was also last because there's only one philosophy major, and I was it. Because when I was going to my senior year, I had to figure a way to graduate. And that was the only area left, I think. So, and I'll tell you a story about philosophy. And I've told my kids this story. Graduation, you know, afterwards, of course, during graduation, that's your name, and, you know, Bachelor of Arts in philosophy. And my dad, God love him, he would not have known I was at Marion except playing basketball, I think. I mean, he didn't pay attention. You know?
Yeah.
So I'm out of cap and gown. It's a nice sunny day. And my mom comes out, you know, and gives me a hug. And my dad comes out and he says, "What the hell is philosophy?" I didn't have an answer. I didn't know, but I graduated. That's all I cared about. So, anyway.
That's funny.
But I was number one in my class in philosophy.
Yeah, I mean.
You set a standard too high for us, I was concerned.
So what was your first job out of college?
My first job was working for the Boys Club of America. It was over on, if you can picture, Washington Street and White River Parkway. Mm-hmm. There was a DeLauder Boys Club there, and they had a gymnasium. And so I was hired to run the gym, which was really fun. Well, there's some tough kids in there. Whew. But I lasted that. I think I started like in August after I graduated and went through that winter and into the summer. And they had a camp someplace, and I had no idea they wanted me to go to the camp. You know, so, you know, I mean, I figure houses are built for a reason. You know, I don't need to be going to a camp. So I left that at that point in time and went to work for the Public Employees Retirement Fund, the state of Indiana. Mm-hmm. And so that was really my first job. Turns out she wants to quit. So I start, you know, giving, I think I've really been a good dentist, you know, the reasons why she should stay and blah, blah, blah. So finally I said, all right, Mother, let's go for a walk. I have to stop at Kim's house. So she goes for it, and I'm still giving all these great reasons, I think. And then she starts crying. That's not fair, by the way, for women to cry. So I said, okay, I don't care where you go. So she went to IUPUI after that, played basketball.
She's really good. Wow, that's awesome. Sorry, we were talking about your job.
Yeah, then I went to work for the Public Employees Retirement Fund, which is ministers all the retirement program, public retirement programs.
And you worked there for?
About 19 years, a little less, 18 and a half, I think it was.
Okay, and then where did you go from there?
I went to work for American Fletcher Bank in the trust department, which was a forerunner of Bank One and now Chase. Mm-hmm. And I would tell you, I ended up there. My lovely wife, Janice Grandma, we're sitting on the porch over in Eagledale one summer evening, and Rosie says to me, we had seven kids, and she said, how are you going to educate these kids? Now, I'm not real bright, as you know, but I thought, she did not say how we are going to educate these kids. So such, what she's telling me is, go get another job. So that's when I left Perth and went to the Old American Fletcher.
Okay. Yeah. In general, what career advice would you give to someone who is fresh out of college?
Number one, don't take yourself too seriously, you know, and you will be pleasantly shocked if the first job you take is the last job you have. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think that's rare. I do think that it's probably more difficult now than it was back then. I mean, back then, basically, if you wanted to work, you could find a job someplace, you know. And I know that, you know, we go up and down now, but I do think it's probably more difficult, you know. And then I do think you got to, number one, you got to show up for work, you know. Don't be one of those people that, you know, if you start at 8, come at 8:15, you know, be on time. And you know, one of the things that at least I think is a key to success is you don't have to be the smartest. You don't have to be maybe the one that works the hardest. But you have to understand what your boss wants. And that's very simple, I know, and very straightforward. But, you know, if you think you're going to clash with your boss and get away with it, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm sure there's a few exceptions, but generally speaking, that's not going to work good well in your favor. But I wouldn't, you know, I also don't think people should work at a job they really don't like. You know, mm-hmm. so you know, you get a job, and you think, boy, I got a job, I'm making decent money. But, you know, if you're miserable at work, you're probably pretty miserable at home. And that, you know, transfers to spouses and kids and everything, you know.
Yeah, all aspects.
Yeah, but it was the best time of my life anyway. It was when I would come home from work. And, of course, I had 7 kids, and they all played sports, thankfully. But just to come home and to be able to play sports with them, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was fun to look forward to.
Yeah.
And I didn't have travel much back then, so that was good.
Yeah, that's nice. So let's talk about your wife, Rosie. So how did you meet her?
Rosie was a year, I'm sure you won't think nobody could possibly be a year older than you, but she was a sophomore when I was a freshman at Marion.
Okay.
And I think back then, that would have been 1960, I think there was 200 some odd students at Marion. So you obviously get to know people, some better than others, you know. But, and out of here, you're going to look at me and wonder, but you're going to look at that picture. She was really pretty. So, I mean, all I knew about her, she was pretty, you know.
Yeah.
So that meant, you know, don't even think about that. I mean, just, you know, just forget that. Well, my mom and dad bought their first new car in 1957. It was a Ford. Mm-hmm. And it was a November day, and I asked him if I could drive the Ford to Marion. And I always had bummed a ride with a friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And they said yes. And then during the day, it started snowing a little bit and it got cold and icy. So I don't know if you can picture the exit at Marion is now actually the entrance, but you came out onto Cold Springs Road. And so I was leaving, it was not during basketball season, so I was leaving out of school. And there was a car waiting on Cold Springs, you know, parked. And I saw it, you know, figured I had plenty of time to stop. Well, I hit the brakes, I guess kind of late, and slid in the back. At the back of this car. The car was a Chrysler. And mm-hmm. It was like a Mack truck back in. It was bigger than this house. So nothing happened yet. And this Ford just crunched up.
Yeah.
So the guy jumps out, and Rosie's riding with him and a couple others, and she gets out. You know, and I thought, well, there's another reason to cross her off. So this is not going anywhere. But that's the first time I ever talked to her, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. I think really it came down to she just felt really sorry for me. You know, she said, I got to help him out. She didn't realize it'd be 55 years of misery to do that. You know?
Yeah.
That's the way it turned out.
But, what was your first date then?
We went to went out to dinner to a restaurant. And I didn't, you know, I don't know if I'd ever been out to dinner at that time, to be honest with you. So, and she lived at 49th and Arwaldo, which is, you know, it's pretty close to Keystone.
Mm-hmm.
There. So anyway, we go to a restaurant. On Keystone, that's all I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah.
I don't know Chinese from African or nothing. I know nothing. So, so she ordered something, and I got to look like I'm suave, right? So I'm getting a menu. The guy comes over, and Rosie orders, and I say, son, I like number one, please. And they brought me a plate of the worst looking stuff I've ever seen in my life. I thought it was from the backyard, you know. Those are things, always a big plate. You know, I ain't ever getting a small plate of terrible stuff, a big plate. I think it took me about an hour and a half to eat it. So anyway, didn't make a very good impression.
So how long did you date then before you proposed to her?
Well, we got married February of 1961, and she would have graduated in 59, I graduated in 60. And, you know, I don't actually remember ever proposing.
Oh, really?
I really don't. I'm sure I'd, you know, begged 3 or 4 different times, but I don't remember actually, you know. And we didn't have enough money to buy a ring, by the way. So the first rings, the only ring your grandma had was a wedding ring. So, but I don't remember, you know.
Like asking, just kind of happened.
But by that time, she was teaching first grade at St. Thomas. And again, I think it was just a sympathy, pity type of thing, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but I didn't care why. The reason didn't bother me. You know, I didn't care why she did it.
You were like,
Just do it.
So, obviously, you were talking about how the divorce rate is so high now compared to then. You and Rosie were married for
55
years. What would you say is the key to a successful marriage? Obviously, you did it pretty well.
Well, she did. You know, I don't know if there's one key or two keys. I don't know how many keys it might be. But, I mean, like for us, and Jenna knows this, Rosie was very smart, and she had a temper.
Like my mother.
Like your mother, exactly. But like Jenna's mother, she would be really upset, and 2 minutes later, she's over it. Mm-hmm. I hate to admit this, I hardly ever get upset, you know. So, I mean, if we were the same personality, mm-hmm. we probably would have had some problems.
Yeah.
She would have won, there's no question about that, but we put out had some issues. But, I don't remember one, we didn't agree on everything, I don't mean that, obviously, yeah. I don't remember one time where, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to leave, but I didn't remember one time where she said, hit the door, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a credit to her, really. But also the fact that, you know, your life, as you well know, is built around your kids. So, I mean, I don't know if you're married and never have children. You know, we have two boys that are in that category. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that's easier or harder, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know. It's different, you know. Mm-hmm. But I don't know whether or not small things become big things quicker because if their focus is just on the two of you. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, when you have kids to raise and support and everything. Yeah. So, I don't know.
So, how old were you when you had your first child?
24.
Yeah. Okay. And then, can you go through the order of your kids and their names? And
oh, I'm really smart, yeah. Bill, Tim, Kevin, Brian.
Okay.
And then we had a miscarriage, which was a boy. And then we switched doctors. And it's the team. Muffy, Karen, who's Jenna's mom. Mm-hmm. And Katie. So we had four boys and the three girls.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Had you always wanted to have a big family?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing we talked about 10.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And, of course, we would have had 8, you know, had that been the case. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, and you look back and think, you know, I wasn't making much money, and Rosie was always stayed at home, you know. I mean, if we had Mr. Mom back then, I'd been living in Carmel, or I'd been living somewhere, you know, not in Eagledale. I mean, she'd made 3 times what I made. Mm-hmm. But the daggone kids would probably either be, you know, drug addicts or starved to death. I don't know what wouldn't have worked, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So they all played sports, mm-hmm. right? So do you have any, like, good memories from watching them play?
Oh, yeah, a lot, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One is just always appreciating the fact that they played. Because, you know, if they played the violin, I guess I would have gone. But, gee, what a long night that would have been, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know a good violin player from a horse trader. So, but, yeah, a lot of them. Of course, you always look back on the good things, the good times, you know. Mm-hmm. And they all were decent. And the girls got more recognition than the boys, particularly Muffy and Katie. You know, so Muffy was a member of the Indian All-Star team in 1988, which was a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, more important back then. Of course, some of them now, the kids, you know, leave and don't even participate. But and then she played softball and basketball. And then Jenna's mother didn't play much in high school, but she played volleyball. And she was a decent second baseman in softball, but she was too busy flitting around and doing all the different things, which I didn't know what she was doing.
Fixing her hair and stuff during the game.
Yeah. And then Katie played all three. Both of Ritter, and she was actually the city athlete of the year and the county athlete of the year. So they did well. But, mm-hmm. but and the most important thing to learn about being, I think, a parent of a child, who you will either think they're good, mm-hmm. or they are good, but it's the same thing. Nobody cares if they're good enough. People will find out, and they will bring it up. Don't talk about Ethel and what a wonderful volleyball player she is. So, because she, you know, it just drives me crazy. And it still goes on today, you know. You know, isn't Harold wonderful? Oh, yeah, Harold's 0-for-5 from the free throw line today. Had 3 errors. Other than that, he's great. I mean, you know, I don't know why he's not all state. He's just really good, you know. So, just sit back, enjoy them, and let them. And it's not all that important at the end of the day. Yeah, I mean, one of the toughest things I would think coaching is, you know, I mean, or one of our boys, Brian, who Jenna knows, he was a baseball coach at Speedway, Ritter, Warren Central, and now is AD at Southport. I mean, parents are nuts. He's sitting in a chair one night talking to a father of when he was at Warren Central. This kid wasn't getting any playing time. And it was like a 30-minute conversation on one side of it, you know. And apparently his dad was saying that Brian was keeping his son from playing in the major leagues. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe Brian was wrong, but you can't be that wrong, you know. Yeah. You don't go from second string at Warren Central to, you know, to the New York Yankees.
Do you have any particularly funny parenting stories? Probably a lot, but...
A couple. Not I can think of one or two particularly, but what our kids always said that and it's true, that I get up early and go to bed early. So I get up at 5 and even, you know, boy, at 9 o'clock, I don't know if the world's turning or not. I don't care, you know. Rosie would get up if kids got a little older and she didn't get up with them, she would get up at maybe 10, 9 or 10. She'd be up to 2 or 3 in the morning. Now, I don't know if she left or stayed home. I had any idea, you know, what she did. But Brian would always say that you know, we had a 12 o'clock curfew. Uh-huh. Brian particularly he never made the curfew. Uh-huh. Never. And he said that it was unfair here because there was only about a period of 15 minutes when, you know, Rosie was asleep and I was asleep. Because uh-huh. I would wake up real early. And she'd go to bed real late.
Really?
So, you know, if you didn't come home at, you know, 1:48, you know, you got caught. Yeah. But it didn't make any difference. They didn't pay any attention anyway. Made us feel good. We made rules.
Yeah.
Just nobody paid any attention to them.
My mom just reminded me, she wanted you to tell the sports story of the sectional championship and Muffy. Does Muffy ever wear a hair in a bun?
Muffy what?
The one where, does Muffy ever wear a hair in a bun?
Okay. Yeah, that actually wasn't a sectional championship situation, but Ritter was playing Brebeuf, and Brebeuf had a lady by the name of Vicki Hall who had missed basketball in 1988 when Muffy played on that team. The game was at Brebeuf, mm-hmm. and it really was really a good game, and they didn't, they broadcast it. I mean, it was on radio, not TV, but... Mm-hmm. But it was an up and down, really good game. And, you know, and when I go to a game, Lexi, I like to go sit by myself and just watch. Mm-hmm. You know, if people want to talk, I just, okay, well, I ain't going to listen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So Rosie's got a friend named Anita. Mm-hmm. And Anita doesn't know a basketball from a football or a ping pong ball. So she goes, we go to the game, all three of us. And Rosie decides that she will sit somewhere over there,
yeah.
and Anita's going to sit next to me. Mm-hmm. How that happens, I don't remember. And she's talking the whole time and doesn't care about the game, you know. And I'm just getting on. And it's we end up getting beat by a last-second shot by Vicki Hall, as a matter of fact. But this was about a minute and a half to go. Mm-hmm. She's been talking the whole time. And finally, Anita leans over and says, "Bill, does Muffy ever wear her hair in a bun?" This is justifiable homicide. I mean, I know there's not a court in the world would connect me if I'd kill her right now. That's true.
What would you say is the most rewarding part about being a parent?
Seriously, it is just seeing that what they become as adults. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of satisfactions after growing up and so forth, but the fact that one, and I know it's, it may not be true tomorrow, but they're all still married, you know, and I think they're reasonably adjusted and happy and so forth. And they really become more your friends, you know, mm-hmm. than your kids. And, I don't know. Friends is probably bad because they keep telling me what to do. But I don't do it.
Yeah.
I don't do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I just, I'm contrary. I know that.
Yeah. What lesson did you stress the most to your kids when they were growing up?
It sounds so silly. I didn't put it in these words, but it's really treat others as you like to be treated. You know, that old saying. Mm-hmm. It really is. I mean, you don't go through this world liking everybody. But I do think you have to go through this world realizing that in 99% of the people, there's something good there. I think there are some that are not, you know, 1%, whatever it is. But generally, you don't see that if you really dislike somebody.
Yeah.
You don't see that, but it's there. And it's the easiest way to live is to try to get along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any parenting advice?
I can't think of anything other than it's the most important thing you do in life. You should be working at that harder than you work at anything else. A few people have streets named after them. People have buildings named after them, but 99% of it won't. So what we have left behind is the legacy is your children and your family. And if you're not good at that, you know, all the rest of it doesn't make any difference. It really doesn't. You know, all the movie stars and these athletes and so forth, but everybody looks up to them, admires them. There's certain some good family people there, but a lot of them aren't, you know. Mm-hmm. End of the day, I just think they will be unhappy.
Yeah.
Their career's going to end, you know, and they won't have anybody to relate to or spend time with or, you know, be proud of. Mm-hmm. You know? They're not all like that, really.
What would the Bill Murphy of today tell himself as a young husband and father?
Marry the same woman, number one. I think I probably got too involved with sports with the kids. And I really wasn't a parent to talk to the coaches and that type of thing. But but it was a big deal, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a big deal that they played. It was a big deal that they played well, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And I think I just should have backed off of that. Particularly Katie one time, I remember, really got upset with me. Mm-hmm. And it was a game. She was always afraid in basketball that she shot too much. Mm-hmm. On that team at Ritter, that's just the way it was. I mean, they weren't that good. And there was games in which she could have taken over. Mm-hmm. But she wouldn't do it because, you know, it was being portrayed as being selfish. So I got on her about that. And that went over like a pregnant high jumper. And so I thought this was the time. Yes. You know, just to, but she was the youngest one before I learned it, you know. Just back up. But anyway, it's again, I really was a nagging parent to the coach, but I think give my kids too much grief about stuff.
Mm-hmm. How many grandkids do you have?
Well, it depends how you count them. We have 19 biologically.
Okay.
One that they would call great, which was one just born to Jenna's brothers. They have a 3-month-old now, little girl. I will never call her great, and that's not offensive to her, but I think the other 18 are great. So to my way of thinking, we have 19. But then we have a little girl that Nick married, is 20, and the guy that Kayla's married will be 21. Mm-hmm. And then I informally adopted a girl I met down at St. Rock's. I go down there to Mass during the week because there's none around here. And I got to meet her, and she's real nice. And she's the only thing I don't like about her, she's so daggone holy. It makes me feel like an atheist, you know. So anyway, I count 22.
Mm-hmm. And what's your favorite part about being a grandpa?
Going to every sporting event I can possibly get to. Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, you know, don't take this personally, Jenna, but people, I heard a lot of people say the old phrase that, you know, if I knew grandkids were that much fun, I'd have them first, that type of thing, you know. Mm-hmm. The best time of your life is when you got your own kids and got them home. I mean, it is true, you don't have to worry about, you know, this Jenna's going to do this, Jenna's going to do that, that type of thing. But and so you enjoy, I guess, in some ways, the very best. And again, to me, it was just going to sports games and still go. But it's not as good as having them in your house.
Mm-hmm. So you said your greatest joy would going to the sporting events, your grandkids' sporting events.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any favorite stories of going to their sporting events?
Well, of course, again, the successes, you know, are always there, and you enjoy mm-hmm. that. Kyle was on a state baseball champion at Ritter. Jake was on a state football champion at Ritter. Nick was on a state football runner-up at Ritter. So you enjoy those type of things. But I also tell you, with some of the most fun in some ways is watching the ones that maybe don't have as much ability mm-hmm. as that, but just try so hard, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. they really try hard. And you watch them and think, maybe if I tried that hard, I'd have been better, you know? Mm-hmm. And I mean, you get satisfaction on both sides.
Yeah. So the one more story about Nick rolling over.
Oh.
I want that one.
I had a period of time, which obviously I haven't kept up with, but I tried to get to run, and the lung capacity is just terrible. And I started running through the neighborhood. My goal was to get to a mile.
Yeah.
I'd be out running, and, you know, little women would run by me, and, you know, somebody in a baby carriage would fly by me. I thought, geez, this is really hard. But anyway, I finally get to a mile, and I feel like Rocky. I mean, I think, you know, I'm probably going to be a movie star or something. But so I come into that door right there, and there's no, and Muffy, Jenna's mother, and Katie are all standing right here,
Yeah.
And here's Nick was right here, laying right there.
Yeah.
I don't know how old he was, three or something. And I go in that door, and I'm ready to say, I ran a mile before I could get that out. They all turned to me and said, Nick, roll over. Nick, roll over. Who in the world cared? Nick rolled over. It took me 6 months to run a mile. Nobody cared. This thing, right? Yeah. He went, he went from that to that. And Nick rolled over, and that's all they talked about. And I quit running. I said, well, you know, I did as good as I could do.
Okay, so you were diagnosed with lymphoma.
Mm-hmm.
When was that?
Well, I was 52.
Okay.
That tells me, and so that's 29 years ago. Boy, my math is unbelievable. My philosophy to really help, too. Yeah, I was at the bank at the time working and found a lump underneath my arm. Of course, I had to go get it taken out, you know, and initially it was benign. I shouldn't say it was diagnosed as benign. The surgeon took it out, thought it was, and it turned out it wasn't. And so went through 6-8 months of treatment. But even then, you know, I mean, prayer was to live long enough to get the kid through college.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember again, what, you know, I think your mom was probably in high school. But so anyway, as the old saying goes, only the good die young. So here I am, you know, still floating around. It's a shocker. Of course, you just don't think about it.
Yeah.
You know, which is good. You don't, I guess.
Mm-hmm. How did you get through treatment? What was your mindset?
Physically, you mean, or
physically, mentally?
Mentally?
Yeah.
Well, physically, it was, you know, I lost all my hair, which, you know, I wasn't good looking before, so that was not a big deal, you know. But I will tell you this story, a couple quick stories, if you got time. Coming back from lunch, and we were in the Bank One Tower at that time downtown, and I was by myself coming back. I get in this crowded elevator. I mean, one thing was packed, it's, you know, I don't know how many hell. And I'm like, I'm making this up. And this lady who I'd seen before, but I didn't know her, didn't know, I get in the elevator. She said, where did you get your haircut? You know, I have hair like this. You know, what do I say? You know, I'm sure my face got red and I couldn't wait to get off.
Yeah.
I never answered her, you know. But she really said that. Where, I don't know, lady, where'd you get your permanent? You don't look so darn good yourself. But anyway. Oh, the other thing was the first time I went for treatment, it was at IU. And the waiting room, there's probably 10 to 15 people. And there was probably, I don't remember the exact number, but 3 to 5 kids. You know, when you see kids in there, you think, boy, you got nothing to complain about, nothing to, and I would say, oh, why me? You know, there's poor little kids that go through something terrible when you're that. And they were young. I don't think they were teenagers.
Wow.
So, and, you know.
Yeah. When did you find out you were cancer-free?
Roughly 8 to 9 months after diagnosis.
Okay.
Yeah. Treatment, I think, was, it went every 6 weeks. Chemo.
Right.
And after you get through, there's a period where you wait, and you know. And the doctor said something which is true. He said, now, you know, from now on, every time you get a little bump or you get something, you think it's back. And you do that. You do that for a while, you know, forever. But, you know, you do that for a while, think, oh, it's back, you know. So, but believe it or not, I mean, it may be back now, but it's stayed away a long time.
Yeah. And your wife, did she have cancer as well then?
She had several serious things. One, she had breast cancer. We had a single mastectomy, and then a little later had the second one. But she got through that pretty well, really. She was tough. And tell you that, you know, I don't think there's any question about this, that women are tougher than men, particularly when it comes to illness or problems, you know. But she had a lot of issues. The thing that really took her was, and I never heard of it, was myasthenia gravis, which is neurological. And that's what really is the end got her.
Yeah. And if you mind me asking, how did you get through that experience of losing her?
you know, I don't know how you're supposed to get through it. Would tell you that Rosie had been in so many different times, and you know, always came out. Mm-hmm. So you know, be honest with you, the last time, which she didn't. I mean, in my mind, she was. But I got a call Sunday morning. She was in community hospital. And the doctor said, you know, how much extra, I forget what they call it, do you want me to do to keep your wife alive? And I thought, well, so I asked him a few questions, and we'd had a living will, but that hadn't kicked in, you know. So anyway, after he told me that she'd probably be on a ventilator, I said, she doesn't want that, we don't want that, so that's, you know. Mm-hmm. When you decide. Yeah. But I would tell you, in all honesty, and I haven't even told the kids this, I don't think, but I've questioned myself a lot because I made that decision like in 5 minutes, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was, to be honest with you, I don't think it was a wrong decision, but you still question it.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, if it was reversed, Rosie said, kill him.
No. As you look back on your life, who were the people who have had the greatest impact on you or influenced you the most, would you
sure.
say?
It's a good question. Coaches always do, mm-hmm. number one. Not the most, and I don't mean that necessarily, but they always do. And a gentleman named Walt Fields was the Marion coach at the time. And how he ended up there, I don't know, because he had been at Batesville and won, I think he got to the semi-state 1 year, of course, before class basketball. And he went to Cecina and was successful there. Somehow he ended up Marion. But he actually was an extremely good coach. Never cussed.
Wow.
It was unbelievable. I can remember games, strictly, it's things I remember more for some reason at Cecina. And he, of course, he'd have to hire the officials, you know, mm-hmm. he had to do it all.
Yeah.
So, and he did this more than once, but the referees made a particularly bad call. And he jumped up, you know, his face as red as could be, and he said, golly, Gene, what was that? You know, like Bobby Knight's, you know, but anyway. But coaches, he was the one, I think, you know, your parents always won. And in my case, my older brother, mm-hmm. he was 6 years older than me.
Yeah. You know,
smarter, better looking, better athlete. I don't even know why I liked him, come think of it. But
I know you've kind of said when your children were at home, so that probably will be your answer, maybe. Do you have like a favorite memory or time period of your life?
That was it.
Yeah.
It. Uh-huh. And so I think Bill was born in 64. Would that be right? I don't know. Something like that. But yeah, it was, you know, just, and I don't mean everything's great, you know. Mm-hmm. Money was the biggest issue. Rosie wouldn't buy anything for herself. If she did, you know, we'd probably have been homeless. But other than that, you know, it was just good times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you regret anything throughout your life, would you say?
Oh, my goodness gracious. specifically, yeah, I've done a lot of dumb things, but I have a history of doing those in too many dimensions. I do. The regret I have is that I never mistreated Rosie. Mm-hmm. I never did that. But I also realized, looking back, I never appreciated her enough either. You know?
Yeah.
And I didn't, if I told her, I didn't tell her that enough. And I didn't act like it enough. But, you know, it's easy to say that's what you regret when you can't do it anymore, make up for it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, yeah.
Probably that.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to my generation?
Well, you know, we talk about the good old days, you know, and I've always felt like that, even before I got to this age, that the good old days really weren't necessarily the good old days, they were just different, you know. But now, with the pandemic and the riots and, you know, everything connected with where this country is right now. I don't say I feel sorry for your generation, but I'm concerned that, and I do think we'll get through this, and I think we'll be fine. I don't mean that, but I can't imagine being your ages and even have to think about this stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't have any major thing to worry about, you know, when World War II, obviously, and Vietnam was, just almost a sidelight to most of us. But I think if any advice is that enjoy each day, appreciate your family, and know that the one choice in life that we don't have is who we're born into, what family we're born into. And you think about people that you know that not necessarily they're abused or whatever, but just don't have supportive parents or family, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, and then when things get bad, I think it's got to really be tough.
Yeah.
That's not really advice. I think you got, but I think you appreciate what you have been given. And again, never take yourself too seriously and enjoy each day as much as you can.
Mm-hmm. And you've attended daily Mass for the past 40 plus years, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you attend Mass?
Now I go down to St. Rock's on the south side.
Okay.
Don't make a big thing of this. I mean, it's hypocritical in many ways because I do it just to try to start off the day right. You know, I'm not, you know, holy at all. But I started when I used to, during Lent, go to Mass. And then one Monday after one Easter, I thought, well, it's kind of silly to stop just because Lent's over, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I started going. But again, it's not a big thing at all. It's just kind of keep things in perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How has your faith impacted your, what has that taught you over the years, though? Your faith?
One, to thank the good Lord it's given to you. And number two, that we're not in control. Number three, prayers do matter. Mm-hmm. But also, I think, you know, my experience has been to some degree that the people that I know that I feel are the happiest and most well-adjusted have faith of some kind. I mean, they realize that there's a higher being, whether it's Catholic or whatever, it doesn't make any difference in that regard. But they're the happiest ones. They can deal with adversity much better than the non-believer. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, which I've never understood, is how anybody could be an atheist and think this just all happened. Mm-hmm. I mean, how did it happen? You know, I mean, it happened. It doesn't make any sense. But mm-hmm. but anyway.
Yeah.
But don't make a big thing on me going to Mass. It's because okay. It's not.
Okay. Well, I won't. So, what do you believe is the most important thing in life?
Oh, that part's easy. Your faith in your family, in that order. You know.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I think, you know, I really believe this. In some ways, I think people who are highly intelligent, I mean highly intelligent, I feel sorry for them. I think they've got, because they look at everything, you know, like the scientists, a lot of scientists are people who are non-believers, you mm-hmm. know. For someone like me that, you know, can't even spell scientist, it's easy for me to believe, you know.
Yeah.
And it just amazes me that I don't care how bright you are, that you can believe that this world just started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someday, and it's not going to be here, mm-hmm. you know.
This is a reminder that the thoughts expressed here are not my own, but Mr. Murphy's personal opinion.
You know, I didn't take this out, but I believe the pandemic and everything went through the riots is to some degree the reflection of our society with pro-choice. And if there's any way that anybody can justify that, you know, I understand the life of the mother and that's it. But my guess is that for every 1,000 abortions, maybe 10 or something, that's a valid reason, and that's fine. But the only reason that society doesn't kill us old people is because mm-hmm. they get to know us and they feel sorry for us or whatever. But mm-hmm. how do you justify, here's your little niece, you know, I mean, how do you look at that and say, well, it was okay to take her life?
Yeah.
You know, Mother Teresa said something. Mother Teresa said a lot of things, I know. But someone asked her why the United States had never elected a female president. You know what she said?
No, what she said?
Because she was aborted.
Oh, wow.
That makes you think, doesn't it?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, I sure get on my high horse time, don't I? I know.
So, what do you hope to be remembered by?
Oh, I won't be remembered.
Oh,
how? No. Just, if anything, just, you know, hopefully someone who blessed with a good family, but that part I do appreciate. I didn't appreciate Rosie as I should have, but yeah, that I do. And that's, you know, that's more than enough.
Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much it. Good job.
Well, I don't know about that, young lady, but just you can cut all that out and say, well, I didn't have one on Sunday.
Bill Murphy, the man who doesn't take himself too seriously. The man with the driest sense of humor, using himself as the butt of all of his jokes. The man who lives for sports. The man who has attended Mass daily for the last 40 plus years. The man who believes at the heart of it, most people are good. While Bill is immensely humble, anyone who knows him would say he is the greatest, and the legacy he will leave spans across several generations as the man who put his faith in his family above all else.
Your cell phone, do you call it your texting machine?
Oh, yeah. It's a good one. I'll show that to you. This is brand new. They just came out. I lose it every time. That's part of my problem.
Oh, my. That's great. I don't think I've seen one like that.
It just came out. And it's a nervous thing. This thing, it'll make a sound like a ringing sound. And if I do this, hit that and say hello, sometimes there's somebody talking on the other end. Now this daggone, that's incredible.
Doesn't bother anyone?
No.
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing this.
Unless he gives missed free throws.
Yes.
During that part, he always knew our free throw percentage.
Well, just think, you're 15 feet from the bench. Mm-hmm. Nobody on the floor can guard you. There's nobody on the floor can say, how you doing today, Ethel? And you don't do that. All you have to do, the fans can scream at you. There's nobody else. No, and you can't make 70%.